So yes, I'm from MoMA, and I wanted to just kind of start with just 1 second of the history, which is that MoMA here on 53rd Street was created in 1929. It opened its doors, and the idea was to help people enjoy, understand, and use the art of our time. And this is Alfred Barr, who was the first director. And we have a very long history of serving underserved audiences. So here's a flyer from the War Veterans Art Center, which was developed in the 40s to help war veterans reacclimate to civilian life using art. And we continue in the same spirit today. This photo is from the 1990s, which I can't believe the 1990s were that long ago. But the 1990s, back in the day, and this is this shows one of our educators from MoMA working with a group from a care organization. And that was really something that we did a great deal of, was to connect with community organizations and have them bring groups to the museum, and also to have our educators go to them in all five boroughs. And that was, through that work, was how we really got to know more about older adults working with senior centers and assisted living facilities, and certainly introduced us to people with dementia. At the time, there were very few programs specifically for people with dementia. And so we, in 2003, piloted some programs and looked to the field for help and advice. We worked with the medical community, our friends at Mount Sinai, for instance. We worked with the healthcare community, people in arts and health, certainly people here like Jed Levine and others, and also individuals with dementia. Richard Taylor was a good friend to us, and a man named Jay Smith, and really wanted to get their thoughts about this and, you know, what we should be doing. And this input provided us with a better understanding of the disease and the strategies for communication. We paired their advice with our expertise in museum teaching practice. And you know, many of the programs that we do at the museum use a similar approach, right? It's an inquiry-based approach with an emphasis on forging social connections. So we trained our educators to adapt their teaching for this particular audience. And in 2006, we launched the Meet Me at MoMA program. And it continues today in a very similar way. It was actually taking place just before I got here. The main difference is that the museum is now open 7 days a week. Let's all just say, boo. Okay, one, two, three. Boo! Exactly. Hissing. Whatever you need to do, just do it, because I do that every day. And I'm going to get to that point and why it's so bad later. But so the idea with our program is that we form groups of people. Usually it's a dyad that arrives at the museum. It's a person with dementia with their care partner, either a family member or a professional care partner. And then they are grouped up with other people to, you know, form a group of, I don't know how many people are here, maybe 11, 12, something like that. And what we found, and what you all have found, is that art is a perfect tool to use. It doesn't require memory. Sometimes it will help people tap into long-term memories, but it's really about being in the moment together in front of a work of art, whether it's a painting or a sculpture or a photograph. It can be most anything. We've also developed programs that get people's hands dirty, and they're, you know, art making of all different kinds, and it's really a self-selecting group that participates in this. So not everybody wants to do this, but it's done at a very high level. I know that people with dementia can you know, have a hypersensitivity to infantilization. And so we really want them to understand that we're using the highest level materials and we're really approaching this in a very professional way. So the MoMA Alzheimer's Project came about because of the generosity of the MetLife Foundation. And they, in 2007, approached me about taking the MoMA model and encouraging others to develop their own programs. And so since then, and you know, thanks to these grants, we've been able to work with many, many different museums and people across the country and all over the world. And now we count 125 museums worldwide have committed to and are serving this particular audience. And here's a map that kind of breaks it down. Let's see. The other things that we were able to do through the MoMA Alzheimer's Project were create this book, which has been translated in Swedish and Japanese as well, and create this website, which is both in English and Spanish, and it's, you know, still live, so please go visit it. It's got a lot of the same content as the book, but it also has training videos, and we also have videos that showcase the programs that are offered at different institutions all over the world. And the last piece of the MoMA Alzheimer's Project is the research, and Lindsay touched on the importance of research. It really is so important. It's a vast undertaking to do, but in this study from 2007 to 2008, we worked with a group of early stage participants and their care partners. And some of the things that they reported were fewer, after participating in Meet Me at MoMA, they reported fewer emotional problems, elevated mood. They felt an increase in social support and an elevation in self-esteem. So the details of the study are in the book and also on the website. The aspects of the program that they said most contribute to its impact are the educator, intellectual stimulation, shared experiences, social interaction, an accepting environment, and program extension. Program extension, I mean by, you know, very often we will give a reproduction of a work of art that they've seen during the program. And so to encourage them to then take it home, to talk about it the next day with the person that they came with, to show it to somebody else that comes over to their house and that kind of thing. And that, you know, you can be creative with that in all sorts of ways. It doesn't have to be that. So I was asked to talk about two must-haves, so I'm going to talk about the importance of the educator and a comfortable, accepting environment. So, very quickly, I'm going to talk about them. So the educators, is anybody else near Ty? Yeah, he comes to a bunch of the programs, I think. And, you know, I think we don't give ourselves enough credit when we think about all the programs that we do, right? It's the educators that do the heavy lifting, and they're the ones that see the person as a whole person. They're genuinely interested in this person's different perspective and drawing it out. And sometimes it's not so easy to do. But an educator with patience, an educator who is an active listener, an educator who, you know, knows how to facilitate the conversation and kind of pull from different people and kind of put it all together, it really makes a huge difference. So I wanted to mention that. And then the comfortable environment goes into the challenge section for us also, because I was asked to provide two challenges as well. So I'm going to tell you that we definitely always have an accepting environment, but the comfortable environment is not as comfortable when the museum is open to the public, and it just isn't. And you know, we will do everything else that we can. We'll provide the stools, we'll provide name tags, we'll provide listening devices which enhance the sound when the galleries are very loud and acoustically challenging. But it's not as good. Now, we've also done some other workarounds where, like for the Rauschenberg exhibition, which you all must come and see, which opens to the public, I think, tomorrow. It's really fantastic. So we've worked with the curators to get access to these shows ahead of the general public. They'll be able to go in a couple of days before, and so it's quiet and empty, and that's really made a difference. And people, you know, across the museum really want to work with us. We work with the frontline staff to help kind of escort our groups through and navigate through crowds and so on and so forth. So it's a challenge, but it's a challenge for all of our audiences. The other thing that I wanted to mention as a challenge is the abstract or challenging works of art, and I'm so glad that Lindsay use that example about the brown leaf, because I can't tell you enough. You know, you said it so beautifully, and I think I think it is the educator very often who feels uncomfortable delving into some of these conversations. But I do believe that that's where the good stuff comes out, right? And, you know, with our collection, we don't have that much of a choice. So we end up going to works that look like this. You know, we really believe, though, that people with dementia should still be challenged. You know, that we can look at works like this. Today, Larissa can attest to it. The first work one of our groups went to was Picasso's Night Fishing at Antibes, which is just this wild, you know, Picasso at his kind of, you know, craziest, with lots of abstracted figures and sort of a puzzle, really, a puzzle to put together. But they did. They really did. You know, I always talk about Christina's World, which I don't have a picture of, but it's Andrew Wyeth's, you know, the back of the woman, Christina. And whereas that, or figurative, obviously, it's a great one because it's ambiguous, right? Again, for any group, we don't know what the expression on her face is, and so we wonder and we talk about it. So in closing, I would just say that, you know, one gentleman said to me a while back, he's about 85, and he said to me, I said to him, what was your profession? What did you do? And he paused and he said, I'm still learning. So with that, I will turn the mic over to the next panelist, but thank you.